The 4Ps Radio Training School is sponsored by the Isle of Wight Foundation, helping to tackle social inclusion through their annual giving programme. Find out more on the Island Roads website.
We have the one, the only, Ian Charles Dickens Inn. And just straight off the bat, let's ask you a freaky question. Just by saying about local music, no naughty words and so on, are there any mucky words, naughty words in any of the Charles Dickens books? Methinks not.
No. I mean, he invented quite a lot of words, but no, nothing naughty, I think. I think flummoxed is a word he invented,
which is a great word,
isn't it? And it's sort of, you know, onomatopoeic. So he'd create words that sort of sounded and suggested whatever he was trying to communicate.
Which is your favourite?
What favourite book? Well, David Copperfield is up there because it's so autobiographical. You can learn a lot from it. I think Pickwick is wonderful. I think it's very, very funny. A Christmas Carol is just a delight.
Well, you can't beat it, can you?
And if you... You know, if you look, you think I'd love to read a Dickens, and you look at it, and it's about 3 inches thick. You think, blimey, that's going to take me forever. So either start on a shorter story like Christmas Carol, or read it in the way that Dickens presented it. Don't think you've got to get through it in 5 or 6 sittings. Every month he published the next instalment. So read it as an instalment. Read the instalments, put it down, come back to it, pick up to see, because he always left the story on a cliffhanger. That's another Dickens word. Just like the end of EastEnders, when the music comes, you think, oh, what's going to happen? You've got to tune in next week.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the way he wrote. He left it on a cliffhanger so you'd come back to buy the next edition.
Do you know what I reckon you should do? I mean, you might have done this already, but I'm a great audio book listener, and I think you just sound like, I think, what he would sound like. Maybe you should, you know, record them and make them into audio books.
Well, I'd love to do it. There's lots of people have done. Martin Jarvis, I think, is probably the most prolific, the actor.
Yeah.
Martin Jarvis. My brother is an actor, so he probably think I'm stepping on his toes. But
hard luck, step on those toes.
I think he's a younger brother.
Yeah, how is he? You got to watch out then.
No, like, put it back in his place.
Oh, right, well, that's cool then, yeah. Uh-huh. Now, Timmy, you got a question, haven't you?
How were the first novels published?
Okay, so they were published not as a book, but in a magazine. So you'd go to the newsagents and you'd buy a magazine, and within it there will be maybe a couple of chapters of the story. And, of course, there's no radio or television, so people are looking for some sort of entertainment. And Charles Dickens was the first author to really write in that way. You know, you'd had Shakespeare and some classics, you had poetry. But to write a story in serial form was quite new. And not everybody could read. So maybe you'd buy the magazine and you go to the coffee shop or the pub, and you might go there with 8 or 9 friends. And the one that could read would read the story out loud to everybody there. And because they're written so wonderfully, it's quite easy to put the voices on the characters so you can really bring it to life. And at the end of reading a couple of chapters, they're all saying, oh, I can't wait to come back when the next issue comes out, and we'll see what happens next. So it was published in serial form in magazines initially, and then once he'd finished the story, then it was taken to a publishing house called Chapman and Hall, and they would publish it as a full book and sell it in bookshops.
And we're going to get Courtney to ask a question in a minute. So, but off the back of that, I watched Bridgerton, and they have like a magazine thing going through the show. And I wonder whether any of what you've just said is based on, you know, they've stolen the idea.
Well, it's similar sort of time. Yeah. So he was a bit of a trendsetter, and that set the sort of idea for other storytellers to follow. There was a very good series the BBC did maybe 7-8 years ago called Dickensian.
Yes.
And they told it in exactly the same way, and it was put together by a guy, Tony... I can't remember his surname.
He was an EastEnders.
He was EastEnders. Yeah. So he told it like an EastEnders story.
Yeah.
And it was a complete mashup of a whole mixture of Dickens characters. So Scrooge was in it, Oliver Twist, Fagin was in it, Little Nell was in it, you know, Miss Havisham was in it. So it was this great mashup of storylines. But each week on the telly, you had a half an hour series. The idea, tune in next week, see what happened next. Really clever.
It was brilliant.
And unfortunately, the BBC, they put it on. For the first couple of episodes on BBC One at 9 o'clock, Then they shifted it to BBC Two at 11 o'clock. Then they shifted it somewhere else, and people stopped following it. And as a result, when they said, can we do another series, BBC said, no, we didn't get the audiences. But they rather messed about with the audiences in the first place, which was a shame, because I thought it was a really clever concept.
I'll be honest, that was the most memorable thing, because it incorporated all of them.
Exactly.
And I remember watching these, and I think that at some point they were putting them on twice a week.
Yeah.
They were so, so popular. Yeah. I loved it. I thought it was really, really good, really, really well done.
I agree.
And I didn't realise that they shifted it around, and then they were offered another series and they didn't make it.
Didn't make it, yeah.
How many times have they done that? They made the same mistake with Only Fools and Horses almost, didn't they? Because they put that on BBC Two, and then it didn't have the ratings, and then I think there was a strike or something. They had to fill some space. They put it on again for just to fill in some space, a rerun.
Amazing.
And then people started watching it.
Amazing.
These people at the BBC, they don't know what they're doing half the time, do they? Have you got a question, Courtney?
Yeah. Where was Charles Dickens born?
Okay, he was born quite close to here. He was born in Portsmouth, so just over the water. And he was born in Portsmouth because his father worked in the pay office for the Royal Navy, so he was based in the dockyard over at Portsmouth. And he was born in 1812, February, actually just next month, February the 7th will be his birthday. So he was born in Portsmouth and spent the first 3 years, I think, of his life in Portsmouth, had an elder sister. And then the Navy moved him to another dockyard, this time in Kent, in a place called Chatham. So he moved to Chatham as a small boy and grew up there. He absolutely loved it, and his dad was working in the pay office there.
You must have another one there. You got a load written down, haven't you?
Yeah.
Let's do them all before he goes, because you might not get the opportunity again.
There'll be
a queue of people that want to do this, you know. Sorry, did I interrupt you?
Where did he visit on the island?
Okay, so the first time he came, 1838... He went to Allen Bay over on the west and stayed in a hotel there called the Needles Grove Hotel. And then he went across the island to Ventnor, and he stayed at the Ventnor Hotel, which is now the Royal Hotel, because he heard the airs were good for your health. He suffered from asthma as a child, so always had chest problems. And the Queen's new physician had said the airs on the Isle of Wight are very good for you, so he went there. And then he had been relatively unknown. Pickwick Papers was just taking off. Photography hasn't happened, so he could walk around. Nobody knew who he was because his picture never appeared. 11 years later, 1849, he is now globally famous. He's an absolute superstar. And he's trying to write David Copperfield, and he's struggling to write. He's got a bit of writer's block, and he wants to go somewhere new to try to inspire him. And he finds a house in Bonchurch, just next to Ventnor. And he writes back to his wife. He says, I think it is the prettiest place I've ever seen, either at home or abroad. So he really liked the Isle of Wight, and he came here, and in the morning he'd go for a sea swim down on the beach. He'd climb to the top of St. Boniface, the tallest hill on the island, which from Bonchurch is seriously steep. And then he'd say to his family and his friends, he said, the inimitable shall be invisible until 2 o'clock every day. So he'd be in his house in Bonchurch on the first floor overlooking the sea, and he'd be writing David Copperfield. And then the afternoon, maybe play a game of rounders with his family on the beach, or he'd go for great picnics with friends. And in the evenings, he'd meet up with friends like Alfred Lord Tennyson, who was godfather to one of his sons, a great poet, who eventually lived on the Isle of Wight at Freshwater. So he was here for 3 months in Bonchurch. He came to Cowes to see a friend in Cowes. So he got around the island.
So he came here for a little bit, and he stayed quite a long while then.
So three months in 1849. He came in July and left in October.
So there must be some references. I'm going to bring in Timmy in a minute for another question. There must be some references about the Isle of Wight in books.
Hard to say. I mean, so he was here writing David Copperfield. And in David Copperfield, he meets the Peggottys, who are living in an upturned boat. He sets it in Great Yarmouth. But if you walk the foreshore from Bonchurch past Luckenham, when Luckenham was a village before it fell into the sea, there'd be lots of people living in boats on the beach.
Yeah.
So, you know, who knows whether that inspired that area of the book. There's a character in David Copperfield called Mr. Dick. There was a family called the Dick family who lived in Bonchurch, and they became great friends. So the assumption is that Mr. Dick the name was inspired by the family he met. It was going to be called Mr. Roberts. He met the Dicks, that changed. And then the chap who Mr. Dick is based on, Charles Dick, had a sister, Margaret Dick. 11 years later, Margaret Dick was due to be married. She was jilted at the altar, ran home in a wedding dress, locked herself away, became a well-known recluse. Dickens's daughters were on the island, must have written to their father to say, you remember that nice girl from the summer? She'd just been jilted at the altar. 2 months later, Charles Dickens starts writing Great Expectations, in which Miss Havisham, in her wedding dress, is a recluse locked up in her house. So, you know. But he was a jackdaw. Everything he saw and the people he met and the things he's, you know, I'll borrow that. I'll borrow that name. I'll borrow that character. I'll borrow that characteristic or that trait.
Wow. Wow, that's a story. Timmy, you got one more?
Have you got any of the original publications?
No, most of them are in museums or libraries. So if you went to the British Library, they'd have original manuscripts. Quite a lot in America, sadly. The manuscript to Great Expectations, he gave to his friend, a chap called Chauncey Hare Townsend, who lived in Cowes. There's a house called Townsend House, and he lived there. And he gave him a signed copy of Great Expectations, which when Chauncey died, he gave to a museum. You can go and see it. It's in the Fenland Museum in Spalding in Lincolnshire. Excuse me. But we owned some bits and pieces that belonged to him, which my father kept. But because they were so precious, he kept them in a box in an attic because he was so worried about damaging them or, you know, sort of theft. And when my parents died, we said, they shouldn't be in a box, they should be in a museum. So they're all on long-term loan to the Charles Dickens Museum in London. So lots of people can go there and enjoy them. And that's a much better way of showcasing them.
Wow. What about the pens? He would
quill? Well, I guess he would have got through lots because it was, you know, you'd blunt a quill quite quickly. So I don't know if any quills were remaining at all. But there's a house he lived in Kent called Gad's Hill Place, which is now a school. But the library is exactly as it was when Dickens was there, exactly as it was. And I've gone in there and sat at the desk that he sat at. There's pictures of him sitting in exactly the same spot. And it's, you know, you definitely sense a real presence in that room. It's extraordinarily powerful.
Well, I must admit, I've not seen too many photos, but every time I see one, I'm seeing your face.
Okay.
It just, you look very similar.
When he was young or when he was old? Careful now.
Can we move on? Have you got another question, Courtney?
There's one more.
One more. Go on, ask them one more question.
How many novels did Charles Dickens write?
So the full number of novels is 15, including the one he didn't finish, so The Mystery of Edwin Drood. But there are several short stories. There's Christmas Carol, of course. There's The Chimes, Cricket on the Hearth, a series of Christmas stories. And then in the magazines, he wrote lots and lots and lots of short stories. Before he wrote Pickwick Papers, he was writing, we call them blogs now in magazines, about things he'd observed. He once walked through London late at night when all the pubs were closing and seeing people tumbling out and this sort of underbelly of a city. So he wrote about that. And he wrote all these stories under a pseudonym, a pen name. And he called them Sketches by Boz, and the name he gave himself was Boz. And lots of friends said, you're a really good writer, Charles, you should get this, your work published. And he wasn't sure. Anyway, he put some stories to a publishing house, and they said, these are great. So his first stories appeared in magazines under Sketches by Boz, not by Charles Dickens. And it's only when he got such a great reaction from the magazine and people wanted more and more that he wrote his first full story, Pickwick Papers, and now he could sign them by Charles Dickens rather than by Boz. So if you include all the Boz stories, then, you know, it goes up to 50, 60, 100, you know.
Yeah.
Wow. What did he must have started out as doing something else job-wise and stumbled into the writing or...
Well, he worked in for a legal firm.
Right.
As a sort of secretary. And then went on, he learnt shorthand and became a parliamentary reporter. So he was a journalist. And he was working for a magazine where he was employed as a journalist for a Scottish chap surnamed Hogarth. And Charles rather took a fancy to his daughter, Catherine, and they ended up marrying. And then, you know, he started writing these quirky short stories, and which was exciting to have them accepted. And then Pickwick Papers came. And it became, they call it a publishing phenomenon. Nobody had ever seen a book sell so much. So there's this boy, you know, at the age of 9 and 10, father and mother are in debtor's prison. He's alone in the world. He's having to fend for himself. And he's seen what poverty is all about, what hardship's about. And suddenly you know, it's heading to the stratosphere, the career's taking off.
Wow.
And you know, he could buy a nice house, and they start to have children. They had 10 children in total, which sounds a lot now, but in Victorian times, that's quite normal to have lots of children.
Yeah.
So a big family and big family house to run. So that was an exciting time for him. He would have been, you know, 28, 29, and suddenly, whoosh.
Wow. You must get together as family and, you know, have events. And
yeah, no, we do. And I always say a gathering of the Dickens family is not for the faint-hearted. It's pretty lively. And it's lovely because, you know, I know second cousins three times removed as well as I know my own brothers and sisters. So it's lovely to have this core figure that we all sort of feed off. It's just out of those 10 children, only two children had children that continue today. So the eldest son, Charlie, and the eighth child, Henry, who's my great-grandfather. The other children, some had children, but the line fizzled out. But it's only through those two that continues today. And it's only through my great-grandfather that the Dickens surname continues.
Do you know, earlier on, I mean, we were talking about the Beatles, and I can make a reference between the Charles Dickens and the Beatles. And that is, I would imagine there's lots of young people that might not have heard of the Beatles, but you play them a song and they would know it. And I said to both Timmy and Courtney when they first arrived, and I'm not sure they knew, you know, Charles Dickens books. I'm not sure they knew, but as soon as someone mentioned, you know, a couple of, they all kind of, their faces changed.
Yeah, so like Scrooge or Oliver Twist or Fagin or, yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I say that we might not necessarily know. People mention Charles Dickens, oh, I'm not sure. But then you start mentioning their stories and all of a sudden they've either read it or they've seen something,
yeah,
or something.
And it's a very similar, you know, they were both of the right place at the right time. So Dickens, you know, coming out of Regency and all the sort of powdered hair and rather bizarre fashion and into Victorian England, and suddenly he's the young writer of the time who's fueled by what happened to his own childhood to write and make change to society. So, you know, he was there at the right place at the right time, just like the Beatles, you know, post-war 50s, bit of skiffle,
yeah,
and then suddenly rock and roll, and they were in the right place at the right time with the right talent, and both soared.
Hey, look, these guys are going to go back to school.
Oh, bad luck.
Yeah. So they got to go. Thank you so much for coming in.
Lovely,
and,
lovely
and,
to.
And you're going to stick around, aren't you?
Mm,
we're going to talk about a show that was very much part of. It was an iconic 70s show.
Yes, it was.
But it was probably one of the shortest shows. But people are, you know, probably remembering. I remember it. I remember some of the people that used to sit in the chair and used to hear that thing, Jack and Ori, Jack and Ori. We're going to talk about that in the next
Look
hour.
Look forward to it, yeah.
Okay, so thank you,
Great questions, Courtney. Thank you so much.
Chef Courtney and Traveller Tim, we'll see you next week. Have a good week. Stay safe.